Walking Dead Season 7, Episode 6, Swear is still over, but we're just getting started taking your feedback here on the Walking Dead Feedback Show here on Post Show Recaps. And now here are the two guys who are ready to do a podcast fist bump. I'm Rob Sestrino. Here's Josh Wigler. Josh, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing really, really well. A little bummed out for many reasons I missed the live show once again this week. Alex Kidwell did such a fantastic job. But when you guys were talking about hashtags and you arrived at the United States of Tara and you said that that was claimed because it was a TV show already, had I been there, I would have chimed in and said hashtag Tara Nova. That would have been that would have been the show I would have pitched. So just had to get that out there. That has been on my mind the past couple of days.
Very good. Yes. Of course, Josh has been very busy covering Westworld and doing a great job. And to all the people on social media who are very much into the Westworld, I speak for all of us who are not yet caught up on all 9 episodes of Westworld and say, thanks for having no chill.
Me specifically?
No, not you. Not you.
Oh,
not
my
you.
God.
There's certain people in my Twitter timeline who I will remain nameless.
Yes.
But nobody can control themselves.
Yeah, no, it's really tough. You know, this was my problem with Survivor Australia or Australian
and
Survivor.
It's the same people. Okay. You know, sorry. Not outing anybody.
Well, you know, if you wanted to spoil the Tara episode of Walking Dead for me in advance, I may have thanked you for doing me the kindness and I wouldn't have had to watch. So, you know, depends on the show, I guess.
Yeah. All right. So
what show are we talking about on this podcast?
We are talking about The Walking Dead, episode 6, the all Tara episode.
Yeah,
of course, that only 2 episodes left here in The Walking Dead. And I feel like that in the words of the great Jim Ross, I think business is about to pick up on The Walking Dead.
Do you think so? Do you really?
I do think so. I think that we're going to get. You know, I think that we will at least reach a boiling point headed into the mid-season finale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you think that maybe, you know, in this like this sort of I don't know, like this quicksand that we've found ourselves in, like this swamp of sorrows where we've been drowning in Artex already
Sandwalkers.
Gone.
Yeah.
Do you think that we are about to move past that? Like, do you think that this past episode, the Tara episode, do you think that that is the closing of the book on that phase of the season so far, sort of the slower phase of the season so
far? Yeah, I think that that's just what this show is. I think that these middle episodes are always going to be sort of the soft underbelly, and I think that we're going to sort of reach the peaks at the, you know, starts and finishes of these like mid-season, you know, year-long finales.
Yeah.
And I think that then we get into sort of like, I hate to use the word filler, but sort of like the more slower paced episodes are going to be in the middle. And then we sort of climax with the, you know, at the end of December and then at the end of the whatever like the year long finale is in April.
Yeah, no, you said that on the live show, and I thought that that was actually a really keen observation. I don't think that that's the rule overall. Like, I think season 3 might be an exception where they've got like that crazy episode where T-Dog and Lori get killed in the prison. That's like midway through the season, and that comes out of nowhere. But other than that, I think that you're right. I do think that the midsections of like these half seasons do tend to be the weakest points in The Walking Dead. I think that that's just the way that it has rolled all throughout. And I guess, you know, we'll see. We're getting into the home stretch here of the first half of season 7. There's only 2 episodes left at this point before we hang it up for the winter until the show returns. So I hope you're right. I hope that this is the turning point, because if that pattern holds where it's like that midsection of a half season is kind of just like sort of the valley and then you arrive at the peak, we only have 2 more episodes to get back up to a peak.
Yeah, so I think we're going to have some major conflict coming up with Negan and obviously this plan by stupid Carl to go and kill Negan. So I think we have a lot of stuff to work through with that in the next 2 weeks. But Josh, I wanted to get back to your reaction to the Tara episode, because in talking, you know, in the aftermath of the episode, I think you were kind of hard on the episode. Do you still feel like that this is one of the weaker Walking Dead episodes of all time?
Yeah, so this is what I had said to Rob off the air. I said that I think that you can make an argument that this is the worst episode of The Walking Dead. I think
that, I don't think it is. I don't think it is.
I want to make sure that that phrasing is clear. I think you can make an argument that this is the worst episode of The Walking Dead. I'm not necessarily saying that that's what I believe. There's like 1,000 episodes of The Walking Dead. I have not even come close to figuring out how you would rank those individual episodes. But what I have done in the past, Rob, is I have ranked episodes of a TV show before. My Lost episode rankings, I'm especially proud of, and there's like over 100 episodes of that show. We're at, you know, almost 90. Next week will be, this upcoming Sunday will be the 90th episode of The Walking Dead. So I, when I was ranking Lost, I ranked them into tiers. Like, I just knew that, like, this bunch of episodes were like the worst of the worst, or this bunch of episodes were definitely going to be top 10 contenders. And so without knowing what my worst of Walking Dead is just off the top of my head, I could tell you that I think that this would be grouped in that lower tier. I do think that this episode, and I think one of the big reasons, as Alex touched on Sunday night, is pacing. And pacing has been such a thing this season, where the show has been really slow. And you mentioned earlier that that's kind of just The Walking Dead, and it certainly has been The Walking Dead recently. Season 6 was really all about this too. I think that at a certain point, like, there's just like, do we have to do the Tara episode? Really? Like, do we really have to do the Tara episode 6 episodes deep into the first half of the season? I think that you were the one who said on Sunday night that it really sucked out a lot of momentum. And I can't think of an episode of Walking Dead that rivals this one for really just destroying a show's momentum such as it already exists. Can you think of a single episode that really rivals that? And I'm not trying to be mean or harsh. I'm just trying to be objective about it. I can't think of one that really just like completely slows everything down the way that this one did.
Well, I think that probably the examples that you have to look to are these other standalone episodes, where last season we got the Morgan standalone episode, which, you know, we had a lot of jokes about Tabitha the goat. But I think that most people were like, oh, OK, I'm into seeing the Morgan backstory. So I don't think it's that. We've often talked about the governor backstory episodes, which I love.
You know, I'm a fan.
Yes, is also the origin story of Tara.
Right.
We go back to that. And I think it's only when we get to the point where we did two episodes of that back to back that we say that we did lose maybe some momentum there.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't think
another one that comes to mind is like the Beth Hop hospital story in season 5, after you've had like these three really killer season 3 episodes, like the whole Terminus arc, you know, destroying Terminus in that first episode, and then the cannibals come out of the woodwork, and then Rick has to take care of them by episode 3, and season 5 has just started with such an awesome burst, and then you go back to Atlanta.
The hospital was bad, just to like, in hindsight.
Yeah, it was where, really bad.
Talk about a blueprint for a half season where we get to like the real soft underbelly.
Totally.
Beth going to the hospital, I mean, it's really... is up there.
100% agreed. So, I mean, like, that's why I'm saying, like, I can't say that this was the worst episode. I can't swear to you, Rob, that Swear is the worst of the Walking Dead bunch, but I think it belongs in that category. And for me, that category has potential to be, like, the worst of the worst. And so I don't know where Swear falls in that. That might be, you know, a fun off-season project at some point down the line. It's like, really do a rewatch and rank the episodes as I go.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm that masochistic that I'm going to do that to myself, but maybe. I think that there's an argument for it, though. I think that there's no main characters in this episode whatsoever until you get to the very, very end, and there's Eugene and Rosita outside of Tara and Heath for like 5 seconds, and everything that happens with Heath is very frustrating, because clearly he's just being saved without a definitive ending for that character, in case that 24 Legacy fails and they want to bring Corey Hawkins back onto the show because Heath is a beloved character from the comics. Who cares about that? Just kill Heath. Just let Heath die. Stop being so slavish to the material. So stuff like that really bummed me out. And everything that happens with Oceanside, I feel like, can happen in a few scenes in another episode.
Oh, so you think that the whole Heath thing is just sort of like the buy time to see how 24 Legacy does?
I think it's, I wouldn't be surprised if that was part of it. Like, I don't feel like there is going to be a resolution to what happened to Heath.
Interesting.
I would love to be wrong about that. I would happily be wrong. Like, if he's been kidnapped by the Saviors, or if he is going to, like, show up in, like, an 11th hour, like, time of need and really save the day and then die so that he can go be the new Jack Bauer. Like, I would be great with that. I would love for there to be some resolution with that character, but I'm not banking on it at all. My bet is that that's the last we see of Heath for a good long while, maybe ever. Maybe we never see him again.
Okay. Well, you know what? That Heath, we barely knew you.
Bon voyage. Go back to the Heathcliff.
C'est la vie.
Yes.
That's fine.
So I don't know. And I think, again, like, I think all of the Oceanside scenes, you know, could have been consolidated and used as scenes in another episode. I think an entire episode on this, which seems very clearly designed to me to illustrate that there is a community out there with a butt ton of guns. And the second that, you know, Alexandria gets their hands on those guns, it's back to the conflict with Negan and they're going to be able to do some damage. But does an entire episode of television need to be created just so that that community can exist? Or can that community be introduced in another episode? Can it just be introduced as part of a different episode? So that was tough for me.
That's a very fair argument. Yeah. I think that probably in a vacuum, a Tara standalone episode, I think, was probably what very few Walking Dead fans wanted to see on Sunday night. I know that there are people who are the Tara fans.
Yeah, totally. Out there. I think that that's an important distinction that you just made. It's like on Sunday night at this point in the season, it's just not like we joke about like the Tabitha the Goat flashback episode that, you know, what we keep threatening will happen when Walking Dead really fully goes off the rails. And this is not that bad, of course. But I think the timing of it at this point in the season is just like, really? This is what we're doing this week? Okay. Whereas I think that there are ways to do like a really great Tara episode because I think she's a very fun character. I just don't think that this was the great Tara episode.
Yeah. And Josh, I do blame Lost for all of this. I think that they made this blueprint of, okay, all right, we could do this. Yeah. Oh, we could go ahead and do a whole episode with just this one character and give it to them. I don't think that was a thing before Lost.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, who knows? There's so much you can blame on Lost, you know, and I say as like the number one Lost guy on this podcast, certainly I am aware of that. I'm well aware.
All right. Well, let's talk about some of the feedback from this episode. Actually, do you want to talk a little bit Talking Dead? That my quick synopsis there.
Of course, let me say that, of course, that we got feedback on that front. So this was asked by Hunter Scholl and Dave Backer. Both of them wanted to know your thoughts specifically about Elvira being on The Talking Dead.
Yeah, it was Elvira, but Elvira not in character. I think Elvira in character might have been more fun. Cassandra Peterson. Are you an Elvira fan, Josh?
Not particularly. Can't say.
Yeah. And so, yeah, she was there. She did not really add a lot to. They got into a little bit of a thing with her and Chris Hardwick about hashtag semen extraction.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
Like extracting like the passengers of the Abigail in the middle of a crisis.
Sure.
Is what you're,
sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that Alana Masterson was probably the main course there for the big Tara episode. I feel like you have to have her. But, you know, she had some stories about, you know, she just had a baby and having her baby on the set. But again, not really a laugh riot this week. And Jonah Ray from the Mystery Science Theater, you know, was trying, but, you know, not a lot of laughs to be had on The Talking Dead and, you know, not anything that was like really like mind altering in terms of how I thought about this episode.
How did Chris Hardwick feel about swear? Was he swearing to you that it was a really good episode, or could you tell that he was lying?
I sometimes like you feel like that he's like really trying to like he's like laughing like way too hard at like anything that happens just to like try to keep the energy going. So, I mean, he works really hard on the show, so I do give him a lot of credit with that. But sometimes it's like, you know, I don't know if there was an hour of, you know, Talking Dead to be had there.
Probably not. There probably wasn't an hour of The Walking Dead to be had there. And there were 70 minutes of it, Rob.
Yeah.
It was 70 minutes.
Yeah.
It was an extended episode on top of everything. So, yeah, I think that's gonna anchor it down a little bit. Just to go back to that, by the way, and to go back to Lost, because you brought it up again, and I will always go back to Lost when it's brought up, is there's an episode of Lost called Trisha Tanaka is Dead, Rob.
Mm-hmm.
And it is an episode in season three, in the middle of season three. It is a Hurley flashback episode, and he and Charlie and Jin and Sawyer find a van in the woods that has some really old beer in it and a dead guy, and they drive it around a golf course for, you know, a good like 5 minutes and drink the beer, and that's basically the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people at the time hated that episode, thought it was a spinning your wheels episode. IGN ranked it as one of the, if not I think the very last, I can't remember off the top of my head, Lost episode of all time. Whereas I think that that's one of the best episodes of Lost of all time, and maybe in the moment doesn't play so well because there is some momentum to the story that's going on, and it's interrupted by a few of these mid-season three episodes. But I feel now, in the history of Lost, with Lost as a historical artifact at this point, that you go back to an episode like that, and that's one of like the last moments of levity that you get on that show. It's a very whimsical episode. It's a great diversion. It's really fun character stuff. It's really, really good. I don't know that Swear quite has Trisha Tanaka upside, but I do wonder, and Alex posited about this, how it plays historically. Like, when you go back and binge The Walking Dead in 900 years when this show has finally ended, and you're going back and you're really looking at all the stuff, like, are you happy that this Tara episode exists? Does this Tara episode play better when momentum isn't as much of an issue? I'll give it room for that, that I think that there is some upside in that regard, but I also think that within the episode itself, there's enough problems going on that can be a little bit of a bummer.
Yeah, and I have to say that while I expected a big backlash with the Tara episode, I have to say that I feel like that most of the Walking Dead fans, at least the ones that I've interacted with, have been like, you know, if the Tara episode, it wasn't that bad. And I really haven't seen too many, you know, we riot.
No, me neither. And I totally respect that. And that's great if that's your opinion of it. I might be wildly wrong. I feel pretty secure in how I feel about this episode, but I'm very glad for people who did enjoy it. Hopefully it was a good ride for those people. And I do think, you know, like a badass job by Alana Masterson, who had just had a baby and the baby was on set and she is, you know, the star front and center of 70 minutes of television. Not an easy gig, especially because it was a really action heavy episode. So kudos to her. For sure. Once again, I lay this at the feet of the writing of The Walking Dead, Rob. You know how I feel.
Yeah.
You know how I feel about this issue.
Yeah. Although I am sort of dabbling, and I see a uprocks.com article about it, about how, you know, as the ratings are faltering, The Walking Dead continues to drift. So I guess there is a little bit of a backlash, and they embedded some tweets, including one from at Skyler _Brian, who is Heath, and at EY Geekness. By the way, ... Who the hell is Heath?
yeah. That's the thing. Is like Heath matters a lot to comic book readers.
Yeah.
And I even think like matters a lot is pushing it. Like he matters. He's definitely a character in the comic books, and you like that character a good amount.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there's a thing that the show does where like they try to satisfy the comic book crowd and the non-comic book crowd and try to land somewhere in between. And I don't think that it always lands very well. I think sometimes it's a wobbly landing, Rob. And I think on something like Heath, where it's like, all right, well, Corey Hawkins got cast as the lead on another show. We're not going to be able to have him on Walking Dead anymore, but he is playing this great character from the comics, and we don't want to just like unceremoniously kill him off. What if we just, you know, go back to that storyline for this one episode and see how he fades away into the distance or gets himself trapped in some situation where we're not going to be able to check in with him for a while. Like, I feel like there was just this temptation to build an episode partly around figuring out the Heath problem, when for many viewers like Skyler and the other guy you mentioned, like no one even knew that a Heath existed, you know, let alone a Heath problem. So I think that that's a little bit of a thing.
All right, Josh. So let's get into some of the feedback questions that we have here today.
All right.
About Tara.
Let's get it. There's honestly not a ton of questions about Tara specifically. One question that we could start off with, since we've already been talking about Lost so much, this is from Adam Bradford, who had asked, were you also hoping that the Tara-centric episode was going to have a similar ending as Lost's Paolo and Nikki-centric episode?
Some twist?
Well, do you remember Exposé?
Sure,
Rob?
Of course.
Razzle Dazzle?
Yes. So are we going to have a poisonous spider bite Tara?
Yeah, poisonous spider, some diamond thievery could be involved. There was like some, you know, measure of potential, you know, like gun thievery going on, I guess. Is it going to end with somebody buried alive in the sand, Rob? I mean, that is something that these two episodes certainly have in common with all the walkers that were under the big old sand pile.
I guess so. What about Billy Dee Williams?
The sandy crater.
Yeah, perhaps. Nobody was pissed in this episode.
But were you watching the episode, and was any part of you wondering, like, okay, we're getting the Tara episode because Tara is going to die? Like, they're wrapping up a storyline here. There was no point in this episode at any point where you felt like she was really in, like, legitimate danger.
No, I didn't. Because, I mean, that's just what the show is at this point. It's like, we did, let's do Carol and Morgan. Let's do Daryl this week. Now let's check back in with Maggie and Sasha, and like, oh, okay, here's another person that's, you know, away from the main group, so let's do an episode with her. So there's no sort of precedent for a standalone episode is equals death.
Tyrese, no? That's precedent.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so.
You know, the whole I'll see you, you know, pay
the bill, Tyrese.
See you in another life, brother, type of stuff. So I was wondering, I mean, there was a few moments where I was like, oh, crap, I think that like the twist here at the end is like, you know, she's just like going to get shot, and like maybe Heath will have overseen it and he'll run back to Alexandria and like give them the details on something like that. But no, I mean, I guess there kind of was a twist at the ending that Tara, despite finding out everything that's happened to Denise and Alexandria and, you know, learning about the saviors being in charge and knowing that she has access to a community with an enormous gun supply, chooses to say nothing. So it's like, how do we get back to those people after having spent 70 minutes on the Oceanside story, and now Tara's back in Alexandria and doesn't want to say anything about him? How do we get back there? So I was actually kind of surprised by that. If anything, I felt like that was a twist ending.
At some point, though, does Tara pull somebody aside and say, hey, all right, so I was at this place, I know they have guns. I mean, is the only solution that Rick and company go down there and kill everybody to get their guns? Is there any peaceful solution of, hey, can we borrow your guns for a while?
Yeah, I do wonder. I wonder about that. I mean, we've certainly seen Rick and his people go all the way full measure, you know, against enemies. You know, they're not the type of people that take chances when they think that they've got like a full win on their hands. They were wrong about the saviors, but they've been right before, like how they took out Terminus. And you could see them putting, you know, applying that approach to the Oceansiders, except we know that they're decent people. Maybe they should soften their shoot first, ask questions never stance a little bit, but like, at the end of the day, they're just, you know, ladies by the sea eating endless supplies of fish and some stews and having, you know, as much of a life as they possibly can. It would be a real bummer to see them all just get murdered for their guns by Rick and everybody.
I thought you were going to say ladies by the sea and then freak in the sheets.
No, I was not going to say that.
Okay.
I was not going to go there.
That's a song lyric.
I don't know the song. What's the song?
Is that Missy Elliott?
Is it Missy Elliott? My God.
Wait,
I don't
know.
We can
Google that.
Wow. Are you like a big Missy Elliott fan? Yeah. Or is this like a big Missy Elliott song that I am a jerk for not knowing? I don't know which way it goes.
Yeah, we'll research that.
All right, you guys let me know. But wouldn't that be such a bummer for Rick to just wipe these people out after we've invested an entire episode in like feeling something, if not sorry for these people, you know, seeing what their lives have become, hearing the backstory of what happened to all of the men in their village, all of that, to just see Rick and company come in and kill these people for their guns. Could you ever really root for Rick again after something like that?
No, I think that even though they did a poll on The Talking Dead of, you know, should they go and take their guns? And I think 80% of people watching The Talking Dead said that they should. No, yeah. I don't know if you necessarily could root for. I mean, these people were shown to be pretty decent, although they did try to kill Tara. So I guess there's that. But, you know, that does not sit like at some point. Like, do our heroes become the villains? You know, this was sort of explored with the Terminus people. At what point do our sort of good guys become oh, they're actually terrible people and we just like them because we know them.
I think that like it's going to be very difficult to watch the show if they ever go all the way there. Like it's arguably difficult enough. Like I feel like that would be really, really challenging to have Rick's people take out these people. I think the likelier scenario is something like you were saying, like Tara decides, like she catches wind of the bullet plan with Rosita and Eugene. And she's like, why are you guys wasting all this time making these bullets when we don't have any guns? And like somehow slips up and says something about Oceanside, and then the secret of Oceanside comes out, and Tara will have to help negotiate some sort of thing with Oceanside, and it will ultimately work out. I mean, it could still work out very poorly for Oceanside ultimately, but I don't think that it would work out that Rick and company would kill those people. I think that that would be a bridge too far for the show.
And just to fact check one thing, it was Ludacris who talked about the idea of a lady in the streets but a freak in the sheets.
Yeah, it's all right. I often confuse Missy Elliott and Ludacris for one another.
So. Yeah. You get some credit for knowing something.
For sure. Absolutely.
I guess so.
All right, let's keep talking.
Can I just bring up one other thing about Oceanside? Another sort of like a little bit of a paradox of Oceanside, where isn't their whole thing about how like nobody can know about this place? We have to keep it a secret. Nobody knows that we're here. Everything has to be, you know, you got to go through a secret passage to get here. Don't tell anybody that we're here. And at the first sign of an intruder, it just turns into Scarface. Like they're just like shooting machine guns and Uzis at anybody that walks through. What happened to trying to keep quiet?
Yeah, it's careless. It's absurd. It's really spectacularly ridiculous.
Like, hey, there's a woman over there.
Just like spraying bullets like so haphazardly all over Oceanside,
right?
Like how do they know they're not just like gonna hit some bystander in one of the nearby buildings
or make a herd of walkers come or anything? Like their whole thing is like, all right, just like gotta keep this secret, don't say anything to anybody, and then just like you know, thousands of bullets just going off.
And there's got to be so many, you know, there's got to be a few at least cleaner ways of killing Tara. If like if your plan of killing like any stranger without asking any questions is to just like spray bullets all over the place, I think you're really doing it wrong. I think you got to like you rope them in, you play really nice, you take them in for that fish stew, and maybe the fish stew is poisoned, or maybe someone stabs the guest in the head when she's not looking or something like that. But like to just spray bullets openly in the middle of the community is absurd, and their whole plan for how they were ultimately going to execute Tara after she told them about her side of the Negan stuff, instead of just killing her right there in their home where they have her surrounded completely surrounded, would have no way out in this situation whatsoever, is baffling. It's stuff like that takes away some Trisha Tanaka upside from this episode.
Okay, very fair points all around.
Let's keep talking about Oceanside. This is from Spencer Y, and wants to know a little bit about Oceanside as an Alexandria cautionary tale. Spencer writes, based on viewer feedback inquiries since the season premiere regarding why the Alexandrians don't just flee their community to avoid subjugation to Negan's rule, the coastal and island-esque community of Oceanside is sort of a cautionary tale about what kind of life people could live if they decide to run away and not devote themselves to a life of servitude to the saviors. If Rick's group in the Alexandria were to switch places with the females of Oceanside, would Rick and his people be better off in terms of safety, security, food supply, etc., than what the Oceansiders currently have established for a community setup? So what's your thought on this, Rob? We've been talking about this a lot across the feedback shows of why don't the Alexandrians just leave? Like, why are they staying here after everything that happened with Negan? Why not just go? And they've got some extenuating circumstances. Daryl has been captured. Maggie is pregnant and needs the hill. Top Carl, unknown to Rick right now, is on a collision course with the Sanctuary. So they've got some extenuating circumstances. But is there like anything from Oceanside that would be an encouraging sign for like, hey, it wouldn't be so bad if you guys left ultimately? You'd at least have free fish.
I think that maybe they're so invested in Alexandria and looking at it like we built this place. And you know that we don't know how many of the Alexandrian red shirts there actually are. So like behind the walls of Alexandria, I mean, we only see like 10 or 15 people on the show, But there could be 60 people. I mean, is that unreasonable to think?
No, I don't think that's unreasonable at all. I wouldn't be surprised if there was a little bit more.
So it's a bigger group also. I mean, I don't know how many people are at Oceanside, but that seemed like more like, you know, what, like 15 or 20?
It seemed like it was like 30-odd people. It seemed like a decent amount of people there, I thought.
So maybe they could get away, but it does seem as though maybe the Negan crew took their eye off the ball. Once they killed all the men, maybe they felt like, okay, let's not. Negan seems to be very invested in Alexandria.
All right. Well, you just brought up another great question. This is from Rob Craig. If the Saviors were content with wiping out an entire village of men like they have done with the Oceanside group, why didn't they do the same to the men of Alexandria? What could Negan possibly want with someone like Rick as an individual? Obviously, for the purpose of the show, they're not going to do that, but I could not let this just skate on by. Do you think this is another hole in the storyline?
No skating.
No skating. We're done with skating. What do you think about that, though, Rob? Just the idea of Negan and the Saviors killing every single male in this community of the Oceansiders before they moved to Oceanside. So who knows what they were called back then. But every boy age 10 and up wiped out by the Saviors. That's not something that we've seen the Saviors do since. Do you feel like they learned their lesson because these ladies took all the guns and left?
Yeah, how'd that work out for Negan?
Didn't work out great.
No.
Didn't work out great for Negan, yeah.
So maybe, you know, that Negan says, okay, well, new plan. We're not going to kill all the men now, but I'll get all the men working for me and I'll give them a little piece of the action, turn them into middle management, offer them a position. And then, you know, maybe they could get I'll give them a new wife, maybe, if they want. And then there you go.
That seems to be a better way to play it these days.
Yeah, he's going to work on, you know, if you can't beat them, make them join you.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think it probably wouldn't be the worst idea for Negan to at least kill all the people that were in the satellite station, right? Like, at least kill those guys. Like, it wasn't the whole Alexandria crowd.
Right, but
he
needs people. Like, his whole thing is like this big pyramid scheme where he needs people to go out and get me more crap. And so he needs people like, and even though those are the killers, those are also going to be the people that are going to potentially be the best earners for him, because they're going to go out and maybe, you know, knock some skulls around if they need to. So, you know, I understand why he's looking at, okay, we need Rick, we need Daryl, we need these people because they need to go to other communities and sort of find stuff and bring it to me.
Yeah. What's Negan going to do if Oceanside is on his radar at some point? Like, if he finds out where these people went and he finds these people, or if these people come to him, how is that going to play out? How do you expect Negan to react to the return of Oceanside in his life?
Yeah, well, I don't think he'll be happy.
Doubtful.
I think he'll be psyched to get some more guns. I think he's looking for maybe like a vacation home. So I think that that could be good to have access to the Oceanside facility. Because, you know, it seems like very dry and arid at the sanctuary. So he could have like some sort of like nearby, like a vacation bungalow to go to. They have a lot of fish. So I think that that'll make him happy. So I think that maybe a new wife or two potentially for Negan. So I think he'd be very happy to find them.
This is another question from Spencer about the Oceansiders. With several women and girls being given names in this episode, they are either marked for death or will play potentially integral or meaningful roles in a future episode or episodes. Among the named Oceansiders in this episode is Cindy the Tara sympathizer, Rachel the spinning girl serial killer in the making, Natanya the de facto leader, Beatrice the Tara riot act leader and executioner number one, and Kathy the Tara executioner number two.
Yeah.
Who do you think will be dying, and who do you think will be living possibly long enough to relocate elsewhere after Oceanside inevitably gets destroyed? Do you think that it's inevitably going to get destroyed, Oceanside?
Yeah, I think so. I think a little bit of Chekhov's Oceanside. I mean, I think that Cindy is the one that you put all your eggs in her basket. And then the little girl, what was her name? Rachel?
I believe that's right. Rachel, yes.
So I think that probably that those are the two that you think are going to be, and I think that they also like, you know, that opened the episode on them with finding Tara. So I think that that's probably the likely to. I think that Natanya is the one that's probably likely to die in any sort of confrontation. She's sort of like the Deanna of Oceanside. And then I think that the other two women, the executioners, I don't even know if we'll ever see them again.
Is Natanya your new favorite character on The Walking Dead?
No, she is not. She is.
I feel like you and Natanya were really vibing on the live show when I was listening to it. Was I picking up on an incorrect vibe?
Yeah, I had wanted to call her the Shigen, but I think that we already used that. I want to say that we talked about that when we went to the satellite tower.
Oh, maybe we did use Shigen already.
And we talked about Segan.
Yeah, we've used Segan as well. So I don't know. I think Natanya is such a nice name that you just want to leave it alone anyway. I like Natanya as the Deanna of Oceanside. We've got fish.
We've got the perch.
We've got soft flounder.
Soft shell crab. We've got eel.
We have PEI mussels.
Try the albacore.
Albacore, Xandria, I don't know where I'm going with that.
No.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think that, like, you could see, you know, much in the same way that, like, Tara kind of improbably has survived as long as she has from being brought into the story by the governor's side trip of all things. Like, you sometimes see people, like, glom onto the group and stick around for a while. And I could see, like, of the Oceansiders, of the people that would really have impact on the show moving forward, I would agree that I think Cindy, who's the sharp shooter, and she's the one that bonds with Tara the most. I could see them bringing her into the show on a more full-time basis.
Probably. Do we think series regular?
I don't know. I mean, it seems like that's like the easiest job to get, is to be a series regular on Walking Dead with how many of them they have.
Yeah.
Like, it's really not that hard.
Yeah.
Like, we could probably, if we tried hard enough, Rob, we could be series regulars on The Walking Dead.
Sure. Why not? Why not?
Yeah. I don't know that we could get the and credit. Mm-hmm. I think that's aggressive.
That's
aggressive. But I think that, and I don't know if we would be like in the opening credits, but we would be part of the also starring. And I think that that's, you know, that certainly counts in terms of the contract.
Look, the show goes long enough. Eventually we all have to.
Yeah, it's true. I thought that this was fun. Once again, from Spencer. Spencer sent a lot of stuff in, so we're going to be talking to him a lot. But this is about the idea of the curse of the scavenger, Rob. This from Spencer. With Heath gone and with Glenn no longer around, who would be the next person up as the second Alexandrian community supply runner? I wasn't impressed with Tara's scavenging skills in this episode. However, it might be smart for Tara to decline the Alexandria supply runner position, as it's definitely cursed. Aiden Monroe, Nicholas, and Glenn, they're all dead now, and Heath is gone too. Does Alexandria need to come up with a better plan for managing supply runs to prevent future casualties? Ironically, Aaron and Eric, the Alexandrian scouts, have spent a lot of time on the road as well, and they've managed to evade trouble for the most part. Should they be up for consideration as supply runners? What do you think, Rob? Does Alexandria have, like, the ancient Alexandrian scavenger curse?
No, it's not cursed. I've got just the person for the job. Spencer needs to be the chief scavenger for Alexandria. I think we need him on the job, sending him out on more and more runs.
This is a really, really great idea. I see exactly where you're coming from with this. I think Spencer is a terrific candidate. Just looking at the history, the track record of supply runners on The Walking Dead, I think that Spencer is definitely someone that we would like to see fill that position in the near future. I think that that's a great call, Rob. I think that's good.
Yeah, I think that Spencer is the perfect person.
Yeah.
Just to prove that there's no curse. I mean, if there is, there is. Then, what are you going to do? Is.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's a couple of people on The Walking Dead that would be decent scavengers and supply hunters. Like, I wouldn't be mad at, like, Enid as a supply hunter could be really, really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
she'd be good.
She could test out the curse. She would also be simultaneously testing out the curse of Herschel's watch. So what's one more curse? Double curse?
I think double curse reverses the curse.
Ah, that's right. So maybe she would be actually, like, you know, completely, seriously, the best pick for the scavenger role.
Yeah, I think so. Especially now if Carl's out of the picture, then, you know, she's got to go back to Alexandria anyway, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe Carl wouldn't be a bad supply runner as well.
Get him on that. Yeah. I mean, he's already in the van.
Father Gabriel, once upon a time, maybe I would have said would be a great supply runner candidate. But I actually kind of like Father Gabriel right now.
Well, Father Gabriel, that he is going to be the star of his own flashback episode in the episode 5 of the back half of season 7.
That's right. Yeah. When he goes to, I don't know what a holy version of Oceanside is. He just goes straight up to heaven. He just finds heaven.
Yeah.
Wow. 90-minute heaven episode.
You see a Father Gabriel go to heaven episode?
Yeah, it's going to be intense.
Wow.
It's going to be a big one. All right, this is from Vicky. Vicky writes in about Heath. I was wondering if it could have been Negan's group that took Heath, because if Heath was okay and not taken, why would he not search for Tara or at least go to Alexandria to see if she showed up? So what do you think about your, do you have a Heath theory? Have you even bothered like giving any thought to a possible Heath is still out there theory? And what does that look like for you?
I mean, they found tire tracks. There was that key card. I mean, I think it has to be Negan's group. The fact that we would introduce another group seems absurd at this point. So I feel like that he has to have been off with the Saviors now.
So you think that we'll see Heath again for sure?
I think that we will get some resolution to the Heath story eventually.
If Heath has been picked up by the Saviors, then the Saviors were super close to Oceanside. And for them to have not found Oceanside would be a bad reflection on the Saviors, who I think, as much as we hate these guys, have been very, very effective in their tactics. So, I mean, that's perhaps a reach for why I wouldn't say that he's with the Saviors, but I feel like the Saviors, if they had picked up Heath, I feel like they would have figured out Oceanside was nearby as well.
Yeah, what was the timing on that? Was it so he got away from the Sandwalkers and then a car rolled up and then abducted Heath and took his glasses?
Is that what happened? I mean, that would have to have been how it played out.
Right. I mean, why would Heath return to the bridge unless there was some other like car that went over to a bridge? Like Heath's glasses fell off and then a car was like, oh, my God, the bridge is closed. Like, let's peel out of here.
You know, he could have dropped his glasses separately and been like, oh, God, I got to go. And so
I gotta
he
go
left
back and find my glasses.
Yeah, he didn't have time to go back and find them. So he just had to run off into the woods.
Yeah.
And then some other car came up later and the two things are totally unrelated.
No, but it seems like everything took place all in one spot.
One shot, all at once, everything at the same exact time.
The special bridge.
If Heath has not been captured, then, you know, and we got to assume he's not dead probably because, you know, we would have gotten that in this episode, you would think, right? Like, that feels like something like, are we going to have to do like a search for Heath episode to like confirm this, to find the body? I feel like if he had been killed, we would have seen it. So I think that you can take that out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's possible that we get we killed Heath way back, you know, if like 24 Legacy becomes a huge hit. I mean, I think that there is that scenario where that happens.
Where like they just like uncover his body at some point down the line. Cause like, okay, we're never getting Corey Hawkins back. We may as well just like give some sort of closure to the Heath thing.
Or anecdotally talk about how, you know, that we're going to do to you what we did to your friend from the bridge.
Oh, that would be great. I'd be fine with anecdotal. Anecdotal works in that case.
That's fine.
Okay.
Or it could just be like a never resolved mystery where you're sort of like, you know, maybe, you know, 24 Legacy lasts a season and then he's available again.
Yeah, I think that that's probably that would be my thinking of why I don't think that we're going to be seeing Heath anytime soon. Is just I could see Walking Dead really wanting to just like leave that possibility open. And then like if Corey Hawkins can never come back, then at least like they didn't have to definitively kill this character off and they could always bring him back in if they really wanted to. As for why Heath would not be searching for Tara or at least going to Alexandria if he is indeed still alive and not apprehended or something, well, the dude lost his glasses. He has no idea where he's going. Mm-hmm. How on earth is he expected to even go back and find Alexandria at this point? He can't see a damn thing.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you're saying that he wasn't just some hipster that was trying to wear glasses for fashion?
I hope not, because I would lose a lot of respect for Heath if that were the case. As somebody who has to wear glasses or else I would actually be blind, I would take serious offense to that just as a fashion choice. I think that it's a really offensive thing to do.
Yeah, that's very fair.
So I think that he probably can't see, you know, maybe, you know, he hasn't been this far out before and he doesn't remember how to get back to Alexandria. And he's certainly not going to remember how to do it when he's like been, I don't know, Twilight Zoned and his final pair of glasses in this world have been destroyed.
Yeah, maybe he found his way into the library of Oceanside. Like, no,
it's not fair.
Yeah. Now, it's think that there was any sort of irony in like bookends in terms of Heath losing his glasses, but Tara finding a pair of glasses by the end of the episode?
I guess.
was that intentional?
Probably, right?
She should have worn Heath's glasses.
Then I would have been so angry at this episode. That would have, because she would have no utility for those things. Oh, that would make me so mad. Make me very, very mad. But maybe the sunglasses represent that she will always carry Heath forward with her everywhere she goes.
Yeah, a piece of Heath is with her at all times.
Perhaps the broken glasses also represent what she does not know at the time, but will learn by the end of the episode, that Denise got shot through the eye with an arrow.
Oh, and, like, I don't think they needed to give her the gruesome details of all of that.
You gotta imagine she found out what happened. Like, she's gonna want to know, don't you think?
I mean, I guess she probably would. Maybe she has some questions, but I don't know. That's pretty gruesome.
Like, don't you think Rosita would be like, yeah, man, like, she was giving us a pretty good speech, and she just got, like, shot in the eye with an arrow and kept talking for a little bit, and it was very, very strange, and I haven't been able to stop thinking about it because it was really gruesome and weird.
I don't think you say that to somebody the next of kin. No, I don't think so. But can I say one other thing that Alana Masterson said on The Talking Dead that annoyed me?
Of course.
So she was talking about, you know, she found out in the episode about Denise, and they were talking about, like, would she have stayed at Oceanside if she knew about Denise? And she's saying that, you know, she would probably not have stayed at Oceanside even if she got a text of, like, hey, Denise is gone. And for her, it wasn't just about Denise. She was also finding out about Glenn, who was Tara's best friend. The best friendship of Glenn was... Was Glenn Tara's best friend?
So, again, phrasing is important. I would not be surprised to learn that Glenn was Tara's best friend. You know, Tara got brought into this group only by the good grace of Glenn, who really didn't want anything to do with her because she was part of the governor contingent, and he took a chance on her and really forged some trust with her. And she meets Glenn first before she meets any of these other people. So for her, absolutely. I totally believe that of all the people left alive in her life, that Glenn is Tara's best friend. Sure, I buy that. I don't think Tara was Glenn's best friend.
Not even top 10, right?
No, I don't think so. Glenn had a lot of friends. Glenn was very popular. And, like, I'm sure he loved Tara. Had great, great fondness for Tara and great feeling and great respect toward Tara. But Tara was not Glenn's best friend.
Okay, fair enough.
Very important to draw that line in the sand pit of waters.
Yeah.
Let's see. What else do we have here? Once again from Vicky. You know, kind of tying into the question of pacing of the season. Vicky says, I'm worried that since they stretch out episodes such as Tara and Heath's and The Kingdom, etc., that they're going to drag out Negan's storyline, too. That's a frustrating thought and could possibly turn me off from watching the show. Watching Negan and his men being so evil without them getting their comeuppance is too much to handle. So do you think that Vicky's fears, whether or not you're liking the Negan story, like, that aside, your opinion on the Negan story notwithstanding, do you think that Vicky's, you know, concerns are valid, that episodes like the Tara episode or The Kingdom or all these sort of standalone episodes are in service of extending the Negan story for a while? Like, should we be really used to Negan being on the show?
It's unfair to say that The Walking Dead is going to just drag something out. I mean, when have they ever done anything like this, Josh?
It's a good question. It would be unprecedented.
No, 150,000% they are going to be dragging the Negan story on. So, I mean, there's no chance that, like, oh, we're not going to get, like, the Terminus version of this. Like, oh, they dealt with that pretty quick.
It's true. It's true. I mean, Terminus was handled so fast that it was, like, it was so shocking in how quickly it was dealt with that I think that that's a big part of the pleasure of the Terminus thing. And not for nothing, I think that the Terminus arc is, like, the best arc of The Walking Dead. Like, that three-episode stretch of the start of Season 5 where they just get into it and finish it out, I feel like that's really, really good stuff.
The road to Terminus was a little bit of a snooze at times.
At times, for sure. Again, that soft middle single belly is really tough. But then you get to the Grove, and from the Grove onward, it's pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
That soft underbelly has the consistency of spray cheese, by the way.
Yes, or pudding. Ask you one question about Oceanside. Is Oceanside a locale from the comics? Is this a adapted story?
Nope, it is show only.
Show
only, as far as I can remember, at the very least, but I'm pretty sure that that's correct.
How about the Tara character? Is she a comic book character?
Nope, she is show only.
Show only. So this was all show.
All show, baby. All show.
All for show.
It's a shower, not a, I don't know, walker.
easy.
Yeah.
Okay.
I took it back. I walked it back. Walkered it back. All right. Let's end on this final question from Dave Baker. I think a very appropriate question given the episode. Rob, fist bump or handshake?
For me, I feel like that of these, you know, human social greetings that I have down, I do feel like that I'm probably best with a handshake. Like, I feel like
I thought you were going to say human cyborg relations and we were going to be back
no,
in Star Wars.
I'm just
territory.
So awkward in general in terms of like, I never know what to go for, but like, you know, just putting a, you know, a hand out, doing a handshake. I feel like that's the one I probably have down the best.
What do you and I do? We go for the hug now, right? Like, we're huggers in person these days.
Like, I'll go for whatever I believe the other person wants, and I feel like that you are well established for that you want a hug. It's like, okay, I know that. Boom. No problem. I think that my main issue is like trying to figure out, okay, what does this person want?
Yes. So if you knew, like if everybody just like had like a sign on their
forehead,
on their chest, like a name tag or something that like told you like their greeting preference, like their preference of physical contact for the greeting, you'd be up for anything. Like it's not a question of fist bump or handshake. The question is, what do you want?
Yeah.
I'll do whatever you want to do.
That's basically
I want to match you.
I'm a people pleaser. Yes.
I like that. I think that that's a really good philosophy to the physical greeting.
Yes, that's fine.
Yeah.
That'd be good. Wish I had like an app that I could just sort of like be like part of your Facebook profile.
That would be great. That would be a great addition to people's social media information.
And then when I'm wearing like Google Glass because I want to look like a cool hipster like Heath, then it'll just like say like boop, 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 handshake, like a fist bump, boop, boop, boop.
Yeah, I think anyone who was wearing Google Glass in The Walking Dead, I'd be very upset with them, too.
Yes. All right. So, Josh, that'll do it for our Walking Dead feedback show here this week. Only two feedback shows left.
Two feedback shows left, two episodes of Walking Dead before it is off the air until I would guess February. So a little bit of like a tiny month off break. That's what it usually is between Walking Dead. But we're getting close to the end of the half season at least. And man, so much has happened.
Yes. Did they announce a return date for The Walking Dead for February?
I think that they usually do that after the finale is my memory of it. So
I think it's usually the week after the Super Bowl. I think that that's been the move that they've done the last couple of years.
Ah, so the week after Heath returns to television as the new Jack Bauer of 24 Legacy.
Yes. Yes. So we will see exactly. We'll see Heath one way or another in 2017.
I just wonder if Heath will be able to see anything at all.
Yes. Yes. I don't know if he'll have glasses or not.
No.
Okay. All right, Josh, do we have anything for the hashtag?
Oh, my God. I did not write anything down. I probably should have.
How about in honor of Heath and his vision and his return to TV on 24? What about CTU, SCETU?
That's pretty good. I thought that you were going to go with Heath Vision.
Heath Vision. Yes. like if I had like Superman,
yes.
Some sort of a heat vision.
Yeah, Heath Vision is like the opposite of that. It's where you can't see shit.
Yes. Okay. Well, it is getting colder.
Yes, indeed.
All right. So, Josh, I know you've got the big Westworld finale coming up this weekend.
Westworld finale is coming up. Yeah, it's episode 10. It's a 10 episode first season. We're finally at the finale. I will say literally nothing else about it because I'm so upset that you've been spoiled on Westworld.
I can't wait to go on Twitter that night and get spoiled if I didn't watch Westworld in the minute that it was on.
You gotta be careful out there on the internet, Rob. It's a beautiful place, but it can be a frightening place as well.
Yes, Yes, because people are too excited.
Yeah, too excited, and you know, no one knows like the weapon they wield. You know, it's you use your tools wisely. You know, you've got people's lives are in your hands. You don't even know it.
You don't even know it. Okay. No. Of course, you can follow Josh on Twitter at Round Howard. I will be back with Alex Kidwell to talk about episode number 7. We'll see what happens with Carl. Prediction: Carl will not die this week.
We'll see.
Yeah. Chandler Riggs will be on The Talking Dead, and they've promoted it, so I think that would be too ballsy to kill him off and then say he's going to be on The Talking Dead this week.
That would be. It would be very gutsy to do that. I mean, that'd be kind of cool. Yeah. It would be interesting.
Yes, that'd be hiding in plain sight, the death of Carl this week on The Walking Dead. But so I do not believe that will be the case, but we will talk about everything that happens coming up on this Sunday night on our Walking Dead recap show. You can subscribe to the podcast. Go to postshowrecaps.com/TWD, iTunes. All right, everybody. Josh, anything else?
No, that's it. Looking forward to talking on the next feedback show and then joining you on the live show for the finale.
All right. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.